Vanity Project. My name is Bridie. I'm a writer and comedian. This is James, who's also a writer and comedian.
Hello, Bridie.
Nailed it. The reason that this episode is historic is that this is the first time in the 14-year history of this podcast that we have recorded an episode in the same room.
Yeah, I could actually see you in person and you're not freezing. Well, you're frozen now, but other than that, you're pretty good.
I'm not going to lie. I'm a little bit freaked out. It feels so exciting, but so new.
Yeah.
There's no screen between us. This is very exciting.
It actually feels a little more like we're just having a delusion that this is being recorded. At least when it's on the screen, it feels like, I know what we're doing, we're professional. Right now, I'm just talking to you, but I'm aiming it at a microphone.
Speaking of delusional performances, I remembered this very morning when I was going for a stroll that one of my favorite things to do when I was about 5 years old would be to interview myself. Because I was like, well, I better practice for when I'm a big star and people interview me. And mum and dad would always be playing, you know, radio or whatever when we drive home from school or wherever we're going to. And I would hear the cadences of interviews. So I just started interviewing myself all the time. So I haven't actually officially been interviewed yet, but I'm so ready for when that moment comes.
Well, how were you as an interviewer? Were you hostile? Did you pry into your personal life in a way you did not appreciate?
There were a lot of scandals at 5-year-old Bridie. Dad had to come to terms with.
You walked out on yourself several times.
Several times. I made some headlines there with the cadence of the way that, as I just referred to them back then, grown-ups on the radio speak, whether it's a news reporter or an interviewer or whoever, because it just always follows the same inflections. And I was amazed at the way that grown-ups on the radio could say the same word so many times, like it still meant something. So when I would interview myself, I would ask myself an incisive question.
Yeah.
And then 5-year-old Bridie would reply and say the same word as many times as she could before it stopped making sense. So go, yeah. Good question. And I was obsessed with that and I still kind of am.
I think I've flicked the switch in my brain because I've gone from, oh yeah, that's a cute thing to do, to what would I do if my child started doing this? Firstly, she shouldn't be talking at all just yet. If she started interviewing herself particularly, that would be worrying.
I think Mum thought it was cute, and I know she listens to this podcast, so she can confirm or deny. But I think my dad was like, please stop interrupting the things that I'm listening to with your yeah. Because I would just natter away in the back of the car. Anyway, that's not what we're here to do. I was just reminded of that this morning.
Do you know what? Another historic Vanity Project flashback. Last night, for the first time in a very long time, I was sitting at my desk working into the night, you know, a very active life. But I decided to look up, because it was stuck in my head, Robert Downey Jr.'s Broken Heart and listen to it. And not only did I listen to it, that's the exact one. Not only did I listen to it, I listened to his live performance on Oprah, which I did not know he did. And Bridie, what I want to discuss with you about his live performance on Oprah is that Oprah lip syncs along with multiple, not just the chorus, but with verses as well. Now, my question to you is, does Oprah know the music of Robert Downey Jr. very well, or is she just so consummate a professional, she looks up the lyrics of what, a producer tells her what song he's going to play, and she knows she has to pretend to be a big fan, so she looks up the lyrics, she learns a couple of phrases, and does a couple of lip syncs.
That is amazing. I want to believe it's because she's a massive fan of Robert Downey Jr., but I reckon she is so pro that she's learned it. But then again, when I was a teenager, I'd be like, oh, we're going to go see this band on the weekend. I'd better remember all their lyrics so I can lip sync along so people think I'm cool and know the lyrics. So maybe she's just done that.
Hey, why aren't you allowed to wear a band shirt to a band concert? Because that's such a faux pas.
Me specifically?
Yeah. Sorry, specifically, why did Metallica ban you from wearing their shirts? No, but they sell the shirts at the concert. Why are you not allowed to wear them there? It's such a music faux pas. But I say this as someone who wears all Uniqlo to Uniqlo. I have no problem showing my fandom for a place.
If I were in a band, I would be absolutely thrilled, which I know is not very rock and roll of me to be thrilled, but I would be thrilled to be like, oh, thanks so much for supporting us.
Yeah, I'd be thrilled. That's $60. You're wearing $60 that goes to me.
Can you wear another band's t-shirt?
Well, that's what people do. And like, it's like a fucking Spotify recommends algorithm is what you're coming at. You're being like, people who are interested in this band also like this. And then there are certain bands that you can't wear a Megadeth shirt to a Metallica concert and things like this. Like, there's a lot of signaling going on here. And all I'm saying is I own a lot of U2 shirts, Bridey, and they don't come around that often. And you certainly can't wear them to other bands' performances.
This has been another episode of Unsurprising Facts About James. 14 U2 t-shirts and counting. Tune in next week.
Should we get into this album?
Oh, tell us what it is. I'm very excited.
We are listening to John Lithgow's Singing in the Bathtub. What I will say going in is maybe this is the best album we've ever done.
This album is so fun. It completely rules. It's for children, and James and I are giant children.
Yes.
It says a lot about us that we love this kids' album so much. But oh my goodness, you are in for such a treat. Probably going to add the whole album to the playlist, spoiler alert. Before we get to this absolute mwah, chef's kiss masterpiece, let us talk about John Lithgow.
So what's the quintessential John Lithgow for you?
Well, I am aware that he has an entire career before we're born. He's been like, he has been John Lithgow, a big old star, mm-hmm. for a long time. But he is Lord Farquaad to me.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because that voice is iconic. So when I think John Lithgow, like, I can picture his face, but I also picture Lord Farquaad.
So you've got this, though, in the, like, children's world. Like, it's not absurd to you that John Lithgow is doing a children's album because he exists in fairy tale world.
No, yeah, it makes total sense to me, but...
Like, for me, he's the villain from Cliffhanger. It's not like fun cartoon man. It is one of the most evil men. Like that, okay. Dexter, like anything where if I see John Lithgow, I expect to die.
I think you forget your Shrek. Lord Farquaad is not a good guy.
Excuse me, I would not check myself before I Shrek myself, Friday. I do not forget my Shrek. How very dare you?
but you do make a good point that he does play a lot of villains.
As a hero for me, it's only Third Rock from the Sun. And even then, I think they're trying to destroy the Earth. Is that what they're doing? The big giant head wants them to destroy the Earth, and they don't want to do it because they fall in love with the Earth. Yes, I know a lot of lore about the Third Rock from the Sun.
Speaking of... rocks and the number three. Thank you, Bridie, for a brilliant segue.
It's nice to be in person where I can see the panic in your eyes.
It's not panic, it's immediate regret.
World champion improviser.
I'm off the clock, okay? This podcast land. I don't improvise for free. Oh my God, I do all the time. It's not a lucrative. Anyway. 30 Rock. He makes a cameo in 30 Rock is the point that I was getting at. Actually,
wait, sorry. So that was, speaking of three and rock, he makes a cameo in 30 Rock.
I'm sorry,
Rock.
30 Rock? Third Rock? This stuff just writes itself.
This guy loves rocks.
There's some numerology going on. I don't know. It is fascinating, though, when I looked at his, not just his IMDb page, because he's done so much theatre as well. He really is one of those actors that... kind of has done it all. Some people really do get stuck in like one particular role or one particular genre. He is just a consummate professional. He's done everything. And so whether it is drama, sitcom, something really heightened, animation, whatever, he kind of is so professional that he's not fazed by any of it. And therefore, I'm just not surprised to learn that he released a kids' album. I'm like, of course, whatever he does, he's going to do it really well.
That's interesting because I like... he's one of those people for me in the John Goodman tier, where whatever character you're playing, you are actually playing John Goodman in this. And so when John Lithgow appears, both the Johns, when they appear, I'm not like, oh, who's this interesting new character? I'm like, oh, great, John Lithgow is here as John Lithgow in John Lithgow.
Oh, see, I don't feel that at all. But... it's great that we have different opinions. It's what makes the world.
This is the essence of drama, this conflict.
Oh, shit. Vanity Project's over. We disagree about John Lithgow.
Do you think of him as musical?
Like, I... I had never really thought of him as, like, I'd never really considered that question before I learned that he'd released an album, but I was also unsurprised to learn that he had not one, but three albums. And then when I did some digging, I'm like, oh, he's also a massive fan of the ballet. He worked on a piece with a really famous choreographer in the early noughties, the New York City Ballet. He performed in that, not as a dancer, unfortunately, but as a narrator. And then he had a small dancing moment in it. I'm like, well, if he can do that, and he's performed with the Royal Shakespeare Company, he won a Tony 3 weeks after his stage debut. I'm like, yeah, he can do anything. Of course, this album's going to be a bop.
This shocks me because I had no indication that he could sing. And it's weird that he can sing to me.
Really?
I can't express enough that he is... I love him, but he's the personification of evil to me. This is Mr. Burns' song and dance album.
I mean, I would listen to that, to be fair.
See My Vest is a great song.
He's got such a beautiful tone to his speaking voice, though.
That's gonna be, it's like a Kelsey Grammer album, except like... So the difference between them is Kelsey Grammer is as evil in real life as John Lithgow is on the screen, and John Lithgow is as lovely in real life as Kelsey Grammer is on the screen.
Yeah, okay, gotcha. I followed. That was good. Well, let's talk about this album. Let's not deprive our beautiful listeners from putting this in their ears any longer. This album is called Singing in the Bathtub. It's released in 1999 by Sony Wonder. It is a kids' album, as we said before, and it features a lot of covers of songs, I guess you would say, from the Great American Songbook. That is what you'd say.
The Great American Children's Songbook.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just saying Rod Stewart isn't doing any of these.
Children deserve songs as well.
The Great American Picture Book.
But most of the songs that he's picked are sort of from the 20s to 50s or early 60s, I
gotta say, I didn't know any of them.
Oh.
Maybe one or two, but I didn't really... I don't think of these as your classic. And I speak as a veteran of working in Toys R Us, where you listen to these fucking songs on a loop until your brain gets a hole in it.
Did you think that he'd written all of these? And you're like, he's also a lyrical genius. This is Cole Porter level. No, I didn't get
that this was for children. I'm like, wow, he really aims low for this. Come on, man. Can we get some emotional depth?
You didn't realize that an album called Singing in the Bathtub was for children?
Well, Singing in the Rain isn't for children.
Oh, shit.
Yes! Yes!
I gotta go, guys. Also, that's my favorite movie. Watch it. All right, let's start. This is the first track. Everybody, I can't say it in a normal voice. I have to say it the way he says it. Everybody eats when they come to my house.
Have a banana, Hannah. Try the salami, Tommy. Get with the gravy, Davy. Everybody eats when they come to my house. Try a tomato, Plato. Here's cacciatore, Dory. Taste the bologna, Tony. Everybody eats when they come to my house.
That was Everybody Eats When They Come to My House. Bridie, first thoughts.
Oh, this is so joyful.
It's so much fun.
What a great start to an album, first of all. I love a big band. I've said it before and I'll say it again.
You will never say it again.
I won't. Redacted. I just love the energy of a horn section in any song. Any song is improved by a horn section.
This is so, so, so much fun. I would as soon as this started, oh my God. Oh my God, we're in for such a good time here. And it feels like something that would appear in The Muppet Show.
Absolutely, absolutely. I think the Muppets actually have covered some of the... Covered.
Some of the songs. The Muppets in their own rendition, a real soulful acoustic.
I've done some of the songs on this album.
It's on The Muppets Unplugged. Fuck, I would listen to The Muppets Unplugged.
100%.
Kermit in the Cobain cardigan. Someone get Jim Henson on the phone.
I would totally...
Hello, Jim.
To
House.
That.
Hell. Sorry.
I remember. Oh, my God. We cannot wear our Muppets merch to Muppets Unplugged. We'll get kicked out by Animal. I love this. I feel like some of the... This is not John Lithgow's fault, but some of the rhymes are more tenuous than others.
Mm-hmm.
Don't be so bashful, Nashville. Who's getting around being called Nashville?
I think around the point of pass me a pancake, Mandrake, he starts to lose the thread. Pasta Fazula Tallulah is incredible.
Oh, it's so good. I just really, really enjoy it.
I feel also this like captures a personal philosophy of mine, which is I'm a feeder, as you well
you
know.
Are.
If you come to my house, you are fucking eating.
But everybody eats when they come to my house. You just came to my house and you bought food, which was so lovely. You just put on... I mean, you are a feeder. That's a really nice quality to have in a person. Does this song make more sense to you when I tell you who wrote it? Cab Calloway.
No.
Do you know who that is?
Yeah, he was born in a taxi.
What?
I think that's true. That's why he's called Cab Calloway. No, I think that's true.
Joking?
I think that's true.
I'm going to do a live Google. I know Winston Churchill was born in a cloakroom. Hang on. Are you just... What?
I think that's true.
What? If you...
What, is it short for cabinet? Why else would he be called Cab Calloway?
Cabinet? Don't be so bashful, Nashville.
I think you're Googling now, was Cab Calloway born in a cab? Yes.
Word for word.
Was he born in a taxi?
Says, no, all I can find is he wasn't really born in a taxi, right? And I haven't found an answer either way.
Which means at the very least it's a rumor, so I'll take a rumor.
No, don't take a rumor. That's how friendships are lost in 2007 at school. It's fine. Moving on.
He's a Cacciatore d'Ori is another fantastic one.
Cacciatore d'Ori is really good. Have an hors d'oeuvre Irvy.
He really hits it though. Like, it would be easy for this to be like silly little songs. Like, you know, the like... Do you know when you'd have that substitute teacher with an acoustic guitar that would make every lesson a hostage situation?
No, I went to a very good school. Okay. Where we took education seriously and didn't sing Oasis at each other.
We had one guy named Mr. Fountain, whose name I would have changed if I cared. But he used to come around and he would not let you go to recess until he had played all of his songs. The one about the little clay dinosaur. Again, I would change these if I cared.
But this is a living nightmare.
Yeah, it was then too. And it was real like, oh, I can hear all the other kids having fun, but I would rather hear your fourth acoustic rendition of a children's song you've written.
Also, I can't believe that I just instantly mocked you. It's like, no, I went to a very good school and we didn't do silly, frivolous things like that. I remember that we had a teacher who, if we failed our math test, would make us do a tango around the room. So actually, I retract everything I've just said about my school. Let's listen to the next song. Okay, this is At the Codfish Ball, and one of my childhood heroes is Shirley Temple.
Oh, you're going to go Lucille Codfish Ball.
Is the codfish from down the road in the pond. No, it was Shirley Temple, and I can see her dance to that. I just was obsessed with her movies and things, and I danced when I was little, and I just thought she was so cool. So I was really excited to see the inclusion of this track. She wasn't born in a cab. Just play the song. All right, let's do it.
Okay. I'm waiting for you to play the song.
Come along and follow me to the bottom of the sea. We'll join in the jamboree at the codfish ball. Lobsters dancing in a row, shuffle off to Buffalo. Jellyfish sway to and fro at the codfish ball.
At the Codfish Ball, John Lithgow. This feels like an amazing night that I wish I was there for this. Can't you see him in his little tux with his dickie and,
at,
you know?
John Lithgow recording this or at the Codfish Ball?
At the Codfish Ball.
Oh.
No, John Lithgow's live performance of all of these songs.
Oh, absolutely. It would be so much fun. The energy in this performance is so good. The energy in the arrangements, the energy in the band.
His voice, like it's just a... He's got a phone book voice, you know? And, like, it's so much fun going through this. I put this on for Grace. We were bouncing along to it. Like, This is so much fun.
I think that he's one of those people in my mind. I think because he was so famous and so established well before we were born and sort of clocked who he was. In my mind, he's one of those people that's just been, like, an elder statesman forever. And I think he has that quality to his voice. Like, there's a lot of authority in the way he sings. Like, you feel very comfortable listening to his vocals, which is not the case for many of the artists we've listened to on this podcast. It's just so assured. And I think you need that when you're fronting a big band, particularly with preposterous lyrics. I just love it. It's so fun to listen to.
I keep going back to how strange it is that this is the same man just pointing a gun at Sylvester Stallone on a cliff.
That would be a truly harrowing soundtrack if we played this for that moment.
Eat lead, Fred.
Here comes the title track. This is Singing in the Bathtub from Singing in the Bathtub.
Singing in the bathtub, sitting all alone, tearing out a tonsil just like a baritone. Take a shower, it's an awful pain. Singing in the shower is like singing in the rain.
That's Singing in the Bathtub. John Lithgow, Bridie, what do you reckon?
Well, I've heard of singing in the shower, but singing in the bathtub, this is some next level stuff. I actually really enjoyed this. Do you know what I really liked about this?
Mm-hmm.
Is kind of the like skiffle influences to it, like that very mid-century kind of folksy.
What is a skiffle?
I want to send you some skiffle band stuff now. It's like with the washboard and the it's like
Very... the kind of thing like an animatronic toy would play.
I think you're not wrong. But you'll hear it in lots of like very mid-century Americana, but also like the UK as well. There was a lot of skiffle bands around then. It's just kind of that very jaunty, folksy feel to it, which is just so... Like, you can't be in a bad mood when you listen to something arranged that way.
This feels like a song that Bugs Bunny is singing. Yes. While scrubbing himself with a big, you know, brush.
Yeah, 100%. There you go. That's it.
It's so strange to say. Like, it is so rare that we're this far into an album and you're like, no notes, everything's great, you've crushed it.
Carry on, Mr. Lithgow.
You've got us in the palm of your... In the way that, like, genuinely, incredibly established musician... Do you know what a lot of this is? He's not trying to impress anyone. He is just having a hell of a time.
Would you like me to tell you something to put your mind at ease?
Put my mind at ease?
Okay. I don't love the whole album. There's a song coming up in a little while which I find very disquieting. So I'm just going to plant that seed because I know you're freaking out that we like this album too much. There is a moment which startled me. And we'll get there, but we're not there yet.
Okay, well, let's keep moving on because now I'm tempted. Our next song is called A, You're Adorable.
Thank you.
Here it goes. A, you're adorable. B, you're so beautiful. C, you're a cutie full of charm. D, you're a darling. And E, you're exciting. And F, you're a feather in my arm.
Again, as a villain, when he talks about, like, now, who here knows the alphabet? I'm like, you kids are in trouble. You better fucking know the alphabet.
But as a villain, I do imagine that Lord Farquaad would be like, now everybody will listen to me sing with this band that are unpaid, but will like rehearse and perform with me and you will applaud.
Now, this is a very sweet song. I enjoyed, I danced with Grace to this. It was very cute, like just waving her hands about. It's a very sweet little song.
Cute.
I couldn't help but notice that they skip every difficult letter.
Do that? I've never thought about that, and I know the song really well.
Yeah, it's A, you're adorable, B, you're so beautiful, blah, 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 blah. But, like, they really skip the anytime it gets tricky to how you're going to put this line together, they go straight over the top of it. He never goes, X, you're a xylophone.
Hang on. Oh, yeah, MNOP could go on all day.
Yeah, I don't think he could go on all day, John. Let it go.
QRST. Alphabetically speaking, you're okay.
See? Or every, like...
V means you're awfully sweet. I have never thought about this because I'm always like, oh, this is so cute. Oh, my God.
Yeah, they totally cop out. They're like, look, anyone could do A, B, C, D. Then you're like, you know what? This is getting pretty tricky. Let's just skip a few and we'll get back on track.
This is the thing, though. Like, this song, like, some of the most famous versions of it are by people like Perry Como or Dean Martin was the one, like, we had a CD of when we were kids. I think it was Dean Martin who sang it. And because... all those crooners, have so much authority and charm that, like, they could be singing anything and you'd be like, oh, that's gorgeous, that's adorable. So, like, after a little while, I don't really listen to the lyrics because I'm just like, yep, whatever you say goes, 100%, you're selling it.
Yeah, that's amore. It's amore.
That's amore. look, the next song, it's a great song, it's a Gnu song.
It's actually quite an old song. Yes. Yes. Yes!
I can't even use the excuse of, I think you just cut out. But I reckon we can skip over this one because this is a song that's been covered by some of the comedy greats. I reckon let's keep rolling.
Yeah, let's do it.
Great. Now we get to the song that really worries me. This song is called You Gotta Have Skin.
You gotta have skin. All you really need is skin. Skin's the thing that if you got it outside, it helps keep your insides in.
I find this song quite disquieting and borderline threatening.
Yeah, interesting that you go to ad hominem attacks when you can't disprove a single thing he's saying. Do you think you don't have to have skin, Brody?
This, I'm like, oh, he totally is a villain. Interesting, just sharpening all the implements. You gotta have skin. Skin's a thing that keeps your outsides in.
Hey, I love this as well, that it kind of moves to the same feeling as It Had to Be You. Like, it's in one dimension
over. You
gotta
have skin. Yeah. Oh no, alternate timeline.
You can hear it playing in the background while Meg Ryan and Tom Hanks are finally meeting up at the top of the Empire State Building.
Apologies again to everyone on the dance floor. Meg and Tom's first dance. That was just an awkward mishap by the DJ there. Yeah, horrifying. Really, really disquieting. Like, beautiful if you don't think too hard, but the lyrics worried me.
Let's jump ahead to No One Loves You Better Than Your M-O-M-M-Y.
There's a saying old today, chicks come home to roost, they say. But let me tell you one thing, when you wander away, no one loves you any better than your M-O-M-M-Y. When you start to cry, she'll cry each tearful, make you cheer.
Now, as established, I was listening to this with my daughter, and what is a very sweet song then when it's a father-daughter moment becomes a real, like, by the way, I like you, but...
That's what I couldn't get past. I'm like, this song is so catchy. I really enjoy, like, the almost, like, quite bluegrassy feel to it. Mm-hmm. But because it's a male vocal, I'm like, you're just constantly reiterating that someone else loves you more than I do.
Yeah. It's like...
I'm not top of the chain here, buddy. Nah, your mum loves you more than I do. Good on ya.
I always used to, like, I'd find joy whenever, in a Beatles song, whenever they use numbers, you halve them. So they'll say something like, 4 days a week, I love you. 4 days a week, it's not enough to show I care.
When I'm 32.
Yeah, exactly. Will you still need me? And as someone rapidly approaching 32, it's a worry for me. I feel this is the same. It's like, this is a very sweet song. But again, yeah, not quite the voice to sing it.
I don't think so. All right, well then let's move along. We're going to skip the next few songs here. And like we said before, we really highly recommend that you actually give this whole album a listen to. You can
from
hear them all.
The depth of From the Indies to the Andes in His Undies, right, which of course tells the tale of Hannibal. An incredible piece.
But let's skip along to a song that I actually found very relatable lyrically. This is called Big Kids.
Big kids scare the heck out of me. Big kids scare the heck out of me. Whenever I see them, gosh gee, woo. Big kids scare the heck out of me.
That was Big Kids from John Lithgow's Singing in the Bathtub.
That really does still affect you, hey, because you are so scared of teens.
But here's the thing that I've said before, and it's so unfair. When I was a little kid, I was scared of big kids. When I was a big kid, I was scared of big kids. And now I'm an adult and I'm still scared of big kids. That's not fair. I thought that you grew out of it. But when I see them in a pack, they're so much cooler than me with the perfect makeup from tutorials. Oh.
That is true. There is no awkward Zoomer phase anymore. There's well, no actually, the guys have a perm going, and that's going to come back in about 5 or 6 years. They're really going to have a think about that. But.
Yeah. Do big kids scare the heck out of you?
No, I'm not scared of anyone who can't drive.
I'm scared of plenty of people who can drive because of their driving.
I was thinking the other day that there are going to be kids at the end of this year who can buy alcohol who never saw the Penrith Panthers win the 2003 Grand Final. And in what way are you an adult if you've never seen the Penrith Panthers 2003 Grand Final, Brody? Brody?
The
Brody,
next
you're frozen.
Song is the hippopotamus. Oh no! Oh no! I've lost the power of speech.
that was going to get cut till now. Now it's there forever.
Damn. I hate this.
Sorry, what's the song?
The hippopotamus song. Here it comes.
The hippopotamus was no ignoramus and sang her this sweet serenade. Mud, mud, glorious mud. Nothing quite like it for cooling the blood. So follow me, follow, down to the hollow, and there let us wallow in glorious mud.
That was the song. John Lithgow. So this is Flanders and Swan? Flanders and Swan originally, and weirdly, we've had a run-in with Flanders and Swan because we tried to have them on Gruen Nation. For this is a bit of research done by one of our researchers, David Cunningham. But
what do you mean you tried to have them on?
We tried to have one of their clips on because we tried to reanimate their corpses and have them on the panel just to give their thoughts. But what you might know them for, or at least what might be relevant to anyone who lived through the last couple months of Australian media, is that they created a song called There's a Hole in My Budget. And that song was written about. This is how topical our attacks are in this country. So anyone who doesn't know, this was played, I believe, without exaggeration, over 7,000 times on television. This song, very topical attack, was originally written about Winston Churchill. And even Flanders and Swan in like the 70s have a clip of them playing it and like, look, this is really old, but we've adapted it to a modern telling. And then they name politicians I've never heard of in my life.
Funny that you mentioned Winston Churchill, because I was about to too, but for a different reason. The opening of this song is quite a pompous, almost British voice, which I really enjoy, but it made me think that like Winston Churchill is singing a song about hippopotami, which I'm not mad about. I love it.
Yeah, he fights them on the beaches.
Yeah, man.
That is actually pompous, almost, but not quite British, is how I would describe John Lithgow's voice in general.
Yeah, I think so. I think we nailed it. We cracked the case. There's one more song on this album, and it's pretty affecting, so just be warned.
Just take care of yourself.
Just take care of yourself. This is a pretty sad time.
Inchworm, measuring the marigolds. Seems to me you'd stop and see how beautiful they are.
Sad maths. This is a counting song, and it is the saddest, most harrowing thing I've ever heard. Yeah. It's so sad.
And end any album. Like, look, we have a long history on this show of not particularly caring for children's choirs.
They are terrifying things.
Okay, also for anyone listening in Australia or in the UK, this is the 2.54 centimeter worm, of course. Be that as it may, yeah, really haunting, really slow. Also, maybe the only part of the album that I'm like, what's going on? I get that this is maybe like a smooth transition off, but bring back the big band. I want one last hurrah.
It's not a smooth transition to anywhere except nightmares immediately. Children's choirs should be banned. I've said it. They should actually only be allowed for horror movies. That's the only time. It's not cute, it's scary.
It is a testament to how good this is as an album, though, that I was listening through it and I just had it playing on in the background by the end of the album, and Spotify went on to just some other children perform a children's song, and the speed at which it went, fuck no, noom, what is this? I was like, quite enjoying John Lithgow's voice, really getting into the album. They're like, oh, kids' music. Like, a part of our pact as parents, Miranda and I, is that they don't make music for children, and as long as we can get away with that lie, we're going to push that as far as we can.
That's true.
I'm sorry, no one's ever thought to make music for children. You can't have music until you're over 18. We're sneaking you this music illicitly.
Grace is going to rebel against you over coming to Wiggle in 18 years' time. Well, that brings us to the end of the album. What mostly joyful and only at times deeply disquieting ride. I really enjoyed that. That was super, super fun and lots of high energy.
Does this change how you feel about John Lithgow? By the way, this is a question we should have invented like 20 episodes ago, but does this album change how you feel about the performer?
It completely, completely makes sense to me that he rules. I thought he ruled before. He rules in this album. I'm like, this makes sense. You're a consummate professional. You can do anything. No, it's just solidified my opinion of him. What about for you?
It certainly solidified my opinion of him, but it also, I'm sorry, it feels like a trap. This whole album feels like a trap. He's got the other shoe is going to drop. John Lithgow characters don't just do something this nice.
No, come and listen to this children's choir. Nothing to see here.
Exactly.
2 + 2 = 4. It was received pretty blimmin' well, it must be said. To be honest, they don't tend to review children's albums as much as adults' albums, which is an unfair standard.
Also, odd to do a really scathing review of a children's album, I believe we have.
I would love that. To be honest, I think that'd be great. One star, don't waste your time.
I wouldn't let my worst child listen to this trash.
What I think is really nice, though, that, you know, there are, like, there's lots of, like, listener reviews is what I'm trying to say, all over the internet. And it's so nice doing some digging, looking for reviews and how this was kind of received. So many people writing, like, beautiful little anecdotes about how much their kids love it or how it was, like, a special, like, moment of bonding listening to this with their dad or, like, all of this stuff. So I think that's a really good metric to measure a children's album by. Made a lot of people happy, and that's really nice.
Was it a mistake?
Absolutely not. This completely rules. It rules so much that John Lithgow went on to do another 2 albums for kids, one of which got nominated for a Grammy. Like, this was not a mistake. This was, he discovered a new facet to his career. And I think this is one of the best we've reviewed. What do you reckon?
That's a season 2 for sure. We have to go through the Grammy nominated one. No, loved it. Really, really fun. Really great. If only every album we did was this much fun. Firstly, we wouldn't have much to say. Every episode would last about 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
But good. So good. The hardest problem with this and why we have left it to the end is, all right, which one of these goes on the Vendi Project podcast playlist? Easy to say, easy to remember, easy to find on Spotify. What are you putting on the Vendi Project podcast playlist, Bridie?
I mean, you know I love You Gotta Have Skin. But I think just in terms of, like, bombastic, high energy start to an album, we've got to include Everybody Eats When They Come to My House.
I think Everybody Eats for sure. I want to put on A, You're Adorable.
I think that's it's a great choice. I mean, we could put on any of these songs and people would bloody love it. But I think those are 2 of the best.
Are we ruining our podcast playlist by putting something actually good on there?
I tell you what, if you have listened to this podcast, if you've saved it, and a few people have, it will just ruin your Discover Weekly.
Yeah.
Even to this day, I'm still getting, like, the weirdest daily mixes from Spotify. Stop recommending me the Bacon Brothers. I don't want it. I don't want it. But, okay, listen to the playlist at your own peril. James, here comes your favorite bit.
If you loved this album and this podcast about the album, well, why don't you review it in the way that you do that on the internet? You've got it from here. Over to you, Bridie.
Well, we'll see you next week. And remember, you gotta have skin.
You have to have skin. I don't want any of you skinless freaks listening to this show.
Ciao.